From Michigan Radio, this is Stateside. I'm April Baer. The COVID vaccine doses have begun to arrive. Strange to say, but vaccine administration has almost made for more questions than answers. How do we get signed up? Will it mean we can move around again? And above all, when will more doses be available?
It may take us months. It may not be our turn to get a shot until the summer or maybe even the fall.
This hour, we're going to talk to some of Michigan's top administrators, from Dr. Joan A. Khaldun to Wayne County's lead on COVID strategy and a reporter who's been covering the pandemic from the beginning. We're getting answers to questions that you submitted. While we can't tell you when your number's going to come up for vaccination, we'll talk about travel restrictions, the formula for distribution among Michigan's counties, and more. All that's coming up. Welcome to Stateside. I'm April Baer. There are very serious questions preoccupying everyone in Michigan today. How am I going to get the rent paid? How can I put food on the table? When will my kids get to have a normal school day? One important question, possibly the one to rule them all, is when can I get vaccinated against COVID? We know that you have this and other questions about COVID vaccinations on your mind. So on today's show, we're getting answers from people in a position to know. We're going to start things off today with Dr. Joan A. Khaldun, Michigan's chief health executive and recently named to President Biden's COVID Health Equity Task Force. Dr. Khaldun, welcome back to Stateside.
Thank you for having me back.
Can you remind us what stage the state's vaccination effort stands on right now and who's eligible?
Yes, so we are pleased that we've been able to vaccinate over 1.6 million people. Over 1.6 million doses have been placed in arms. 2.3 million doses have been distributed across the state. So we're still in 1B and a little bit of 1C. And what does that mean? It means that people over the age of 65, many frontline essential workers are eligible to get vaccinated. And we just announced that for people who are able to vaccinate those 60 and up with specific strategies to reach out to the most vulnerable, they can also start vaccinating in that age group.
What's the variation in the number of doses the state receives from week to week?
You know, we are pleased. Over the past several weeks, since President Biden came into office, we've been receiving a steady increase in the amount of vaccines that are coming into the state, about 20% increase week over week for the past several weeks, which is a good sign. We still don't know, quite frankly, how much we'll be getting in the upcoming weeks. I know that we expect it to increase and not decrease, so that's a good sign.
We got a question from a listener named Catherine who asks, why is it that adults with developmental and physical disabilities are not being prioritized for vaccination, despite evidence that they're at higher risk for getting COVID, as well as higher risk for complications from COVID? I have a 28-year-old son with autism for whom a hospital stay would be overwhelming and traumatic. But Catherine notes the staff who work with these adults are being prioritized while the adults with disabilities themselves are still waiting. What would you say to her?
So absolutely, we believe that equity is front and center in our prioritization guidance. We are actually following the CDC recommendations as it comes to our priority groups. I'll tell you, I wish everyone in the entire state, particularly our highest risk, those who have underlying medical conditions, those who have disabilities, I as well want everyone to be able to get a vaccine as quickly as possible. There's simply not enough vaccines in the state at this point to be able to make everyone who is potentially at high risk be eligible. But as we get more and more vaccines, we look to expand that eligibility list, and that's what we are doing.
There's a reader from the Detroit Free Press who asked recently, it doesn't seem like doses are being distributed fairly. Why does County X get more than County Y? Can you outline what the state is trying to do with its equity strategy and why it is we've seen discrepancies among different counties for how much they're getting?
So we, based on what we get in the state every week that is given to us by the federal government, we look at the populations that are currently eligible. So right now it's people over the age of 65 and certain essential frontline workers. So we divide up the vaccines across the entire state based on that. And then on top of that, we add an additional factor that's based on something called the Social Vulnerability Index. And so what does that mean? That is something that was developed by the CDC that looks at things like disability status in a jurisdiction. It looks at age of a household. It looks at single parent households. It looks at language status. It looks at educational attainment, race and ethnicity. It looks at 15 different things, and then it determines how vulnerable that particular community is. And what's interesting is that it also aligns with the severity of COVID-19 as far as cases and deaths in the state as well. So we add that additional factor to be able to distribute vaccines across the entire state. We want there to be no disparities across the state when it comes to social vulnerability index, race, ethnicity. Everyone in this state who wants a vaccine will be able to get one. Our single biggest challenge at this point is the amount of vaccines that are currently available to the state.
We have seen incidences where a number of hospitals have had to cancel vaccine appointments lately. Sometimes they have been overt at laying the responsibility for that at the state's door, sometimes less so. But what should people know if they get information that their vaccine appointment has been canceled?
There's a lot of logistics that goes into being able to manage first and second doses. And so we are working with our hospitals to make sure they have what they need. I'll tell you that when we do identify any challenges, we immediately reach out to those hospitals and health departments, and we do our best to be able to find vaccine for everybody so that they can get their second dose when it is available to them, when it's expected to be given.
I wanted to congratulate you on a new role that you're taking on with President Biden's COVID task force. I know you can't speak specifically to the work that the task force is doing, but is there anything you can tell us about how your current role with Michigan's COVID response has informed the way you're thinking about the work?
Yeah, let me just say I'm truly honored to be appointed by President Biden to the COVID-19 Health Equity Task Force, chaired by the amazing Dr. Marcella Nunez-Smith. I think that our experiences in Michigan and what we've learned and what we've been able to accomplish will inform how I advise the president and the task force. I mean, going back to our disparities very early on in COVID-19 cases and deaths, where African Americans make up about 14% of the population, but we're about 40% of deaths early on back in last spring. By being very intentional with targeting testing, targeting messaging, launch of the Racial Disparities Task Force to inform our policies, focusing on masking and supporting isolation protocols, we were able to successfully bring that disparity down and essentially eliminate it for African Americans specifically. And I think it's that targeted effort and integrating equity into how you think about our response. That is what I hope to bring to the task force.
How has the state been handling the new variants that are popping up?
Yes, we are very pleased because Michigan, quite frankly, is doing a lot better than most other states in the Midwest, but also across the entire country. Our case rates, our positivity of tests has been coming down for 5 weeks now. Only about a little over 5% of our available inpatient beds have COVID-19 patients that they're treating. So we are doing quite well. We also, I'm quite proud of our state lab. We are really a national leader when it comes to sequencing for the new variants. And so we have identified over 60 cases of the B117 variant across the state. We continue to actively every week perform that sequencing so we can identify cases. And then we support our local health departments and others in really implementing an aggressive public health strategy to prevent spread. So that means aggressive contact tracing, isolation, and increased testing in places where we are seeing the new variants.
We've heard a lot of stories of people who are eligible driving long distances to get the vaccine, signing up for 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 different lists, calling places that might be able to schedule them several times an hour, whereas others luck into vaccines by being at the right place at the right time. Is the fact that there are methods that people are using to try to improve their chances? I hesitate to use the phrase jump the line, because obviously this is coming from people's, you know, very real concern about their own health. But do you see that as posing any problems to the equity of distributing the vaccine?
Yes, you know, I think we have to be very intentional with our strategy. You know, and let me also say, again, I want everyone who wants a vaccine, we want them to be able to get it. But we have to be very intentional. There are people who, again, going back to the social vulnerability index, there are people who don't have access to transportation, or perhaps they don't have internet, or they don't have a computer, or they're just not savvy with using a computer and trying to understand how to sign up for a vaccine. And that's why it's really, really important, and why we announced a special program. It's important that hospitals, local health departments, partner with community-based organizations, partner with faith-based organizations, have vaccination efforts at churches and other places where in neighborhoods where people are familiar and where it's close to their home. That is how we're really going to be able to address the equity issue and make sure that people have access. It's not just about allocating vaccine across the state. It's about that outreach, which is really, really important as well.
Where are you advising people look if they're still trying to figure out how and when they can get vaccinated?
So the best thing people can do is to go to our website, michigan.gov/COVID vaccine. There you can find every local health department as far as where they may have vaccines available. If you're still having trouble or you don't have access to a computer, you can call 211 and they will be able to assist you in helping to find a place for you to get a vaccination.
You know, I'm kind of surprised to hear you mention that. We've seen a lot of reporting now that 211 does not have answers to those questions. It's intended for emergencies like shelter and utility problems and food aid. Why is it that that's a suggestion you continue to bring up to media?
Well, I know we have a partnership with 211. There may be some bumps, and I know that capacity is limited, but we have a partnership with 211, and they have our talking points and all of our information at the state as far as how people can get set up with a vaccine.
Before we let you go, any final advice for people who are at the back of the vaccination line right now?
You know, I think it's really important for people to know that while we can see the light at the end of the tunnel, we still are in the tunnel. So even though our cases are going down, our test positivity is going down, those are very positive signs. COVID-19 is still very prevalent across the entire state, and we all still really need to be mindful of social distancing, wearing masks, washing hands, getting a test when we feel ill or we've been exposed to someone who has COVID-19. Those things are still very, very important as we continue to try to end this pandemic as quickly as possible.
Dr. Jonae Khaldoun is Michigan's Chief Medical Executive. Dr. Khaldoun, thank you.
Thank you so much for having me on.
In just a moment, more of your questions with Wayne County's lead for COVID response. We'll be back in a minute. Don't go away. This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. The onset of vaccination programs in your county, your local hospital, and at retail pharmacies and grocery stores has sort of planted a signpost, this way out for Michiganders to follow. But the pace of vaccine manufacturing has left a lot of us waiting. As doses are making their way into our communities, we've been hearing repeated questions coming up about availability, safety, efficacy, and more. So today's show is dedicated to answering as many of those questions as we can get to. My guests for the rest of the hour are Wayne County's Chief Health Strategist, Dr. Muhannad Hamami. A former health director at Wayne County, he has also been a faculty member at Wayne State University's Medical School. He is now a lecturer at University of Michigan's Dearborn Campus School of Public Health. We're also talking with Kristen Jordan-Shamus. She's a reporter at the Detroit Free Press and has covered many topics related to the pandemic. It's good to have you both here today.
Thanks so much, April.
Thank you. Good to be here.
I wanted to begin with just a really poignant question that Kristen brought to our attention from one of the Free Press's readers. Someone just asked, when will it be my turn? I've signed up online through health systems, my local county, Meijer and Rite Aid, and still haven't been able to get a shot. I am desperate. It's simply stated, but it certainly speaks to the way I think a lot of people are feeling right now. Could we just maybe start out with your view on the speed and efficiency of how we're able to deliver COVID vaccinations in this moment? Muhannad, could you start us out? Do you see things beginning to smooth out?
We're certainly seeing improvement in the shipments that we're receiving, the quantity that we're receiving, and that is making things a little bit more faster. And unfortunately, whenever you have limited supply, you have to go into this rationing logic. You have to put priority groups and use some prioritization method. We currently are following whatever the state is putting in place that is coming from the Michigan Department of Health and Human Services. This prioritization list has been updated recently. I think the last update is February 4th, where it puts some timeline where groups are going to kick in and some groups will still continue and all that. So right now, if a caller or a reader is, and they do not fit in any of the priority groups, and they're questioning when would it be their turn, we probably are telling them it's going to be midsummer. But if we go through the priority groups faster because we have enough vaccine, then that might be sooner.
Yeah. Kristen Jordan-Shamus, I know it's not happening fast enough for anyone's comfort level right now, but are you seeing people who are in priority groups getting appointments? And what are you seeing them do to get those appointments?
We are hearing that desperation in the voices of a lot of people, senior citizens who are eligible for the vaccine, who say they can't get a dose and they're trying every avenue that they can pursue and they've just not been able to get an appointment. And they don't want to wait. They're worried about their health. They're concerned about what the virus might do to them if they get sick. The state has been saying that we are starting to see an increase and that it is slowly getting better. Next week, the state is expecting 270,000 total doses. But the thing that people have to remember is that those doses have to be spread out. So they have to go to the local health departments, but then they also have to go to hospitals. They have to go to tribal communities, to pharmacies. And then this week, the state also started sending vaccine doses to 41 federally qualified healthcare facilities. And those are in communities that have had difficulty getting access to healthcare. So it's people who may not have a hospital system to go to get a vaccine. And it's trying to reach those communities. So when you split up those 270,000 doses that Michigan is getting, which seems like a ton, but it really isn't because they get distributed pretty quickly. And so it's hard for people to wait. And people are truly desperate. There was a man we talked to last week who said he'd pay $10,000 for somebody to get him a vaccine for him and his wife. But what it comes down to is that we do have to wait until there's enough. And it looks like the supplies are going to start to increase. Dr. Khaldun, Jonae Khaldun, the state's chief medical executive, said last week that Michigan is getting an increase of about 16% in the volume of COVID doses. And the Biden administration has purchased 200 million additional doses from Pfizer and Moderna. And the White House is saying that that should give us enough capacity to vaccinate 300 million Americans by the end of this summer. But in the meantime, it's simply a waiting game and getting yourself on as many lists as you can get on and wait for your turn.
Right. Dr. Hamami, you and I have talked before in a different venue about one of the frustrating things about all this, the lack of predictability for how many vaccines are going to be coming through at any given time. Can you explain why predictability is, you know, has some importance in how health departments like Wayne County are making their planning?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if you want to plan for anything, as simple as a dinner party, you need to know how many guests you are expecting, and then you need to have enough food to serve those guests. So you can imagine if we apply this on a multi-level scale and we plan for, let's say, next week we want to vaccinate 10,000 seniors and we put in the resources, the nurses, the volunteers, and everything in place, and even go and inspect the venues and all that and book the appointments. But then you end up getting, instead of 10,000 doses, you end up getting 5,000 doses. So now this is going to change everything. plus the frustration that Christian just mentioned on a lot of those that have been scheduled and now denied, then you need to reschedule them, and that would affect the week after and the week after and so forth. Till now, although we are getting now more doses, but till now, I cannot tell you that there were 2 weeks in a row that we got exactly the same amount. We welcome any amount that we get, but again, this is the challenge that we are going to have in preparation. By Friday is the only time we get the final confirmation of how many doses we're getting. So that gives us literally Saturday and Sunday to prepare, because we receive the shipments on Monday. So we are making schedules on the spot, which is very challenging. We can do it for a week or two or three, but we've been doing this since December.
It seems like we're running into situations like what happened at Beaumont recently, where there were 1,800 second dose appointments that had to be canceled. I imagine there's a tipping point at which that starts to affect whether people are able to get a second dose or whether they have to start the regime again.
No. There are grace periods. You can still, it is effective even if you are delayed several days. So that's not a concern. But I can imagine the logistics and the nightmare of those that showed up for their second dose and had to be rescheduled. And also on behalf of Beaumont and the vaccine coordinators and the schedulers and all that, that now are diverting their attention of getting new first doses in to reschedule those second doses.
Right. That brings us to a question from a listener named Mary Lee, who wanted to know about maximum intervals between the first and second injections of the Pfizer vaccine. She's heard as low as 2 weeks or as long as 9 weeks. Mahanu, are the people on the receiving end of the administration end of the vaccines getting good information about that interval?
Yes, there are official recommendations from the CDC regarding both vaccines. So the grace period is 4 days earlier, and that is specifically for the Pfizer vaccine. So we tell people that you need to come back within 21 days, and actually you can do it as early as 17 days. In terms of later, the protocol is, again, you can add a couple of another 4 days, but even if, let's say, somebody missed it by 10 days, then it's still better to get the second dose after 10 days than not to get it at all. And so far, the early studies and early research has not shown that you need to restart from scratch, because you've already built some antibodies and now you're getting the second dose. So the bottom line is, even if you are 2 weeks late or 3 weeks late, go back for your second dose, because it's very important.
If you're just joining us, my guests today are Kristen Jordan-Shamus, Detroit Free Press reporter who's been covering COVID-19 and vaccinations, and also Dr. Muhannad Hamami, Wayne County's chief health strategist. We have a question from someone who wrote into the Free Press who says, I got both doses of a coronavirus vaccine. Now, can I go out without a mask? Can I go visit my family? That seems to be the $64,000 question. Dr. Hamami, what would you tell this reader?
I hate to disappoint you. No, not yet. There are so many reasons why. Now, as Kristen mentioned, it is all a learning curve at this moment, and we are discovering new things. So, one new update that the CDC has put in place is, if you have been vaccinated by the two doses and it's been 2 weeks since your second dose, and you are exposed to someone with COVID, then you don't need to go into quarantine as long as it's within three months. So that is a new update, that in the past we were saying, no, you still need to be quarantined because you can still spread it. So it seems that as we are passing the three-month threshold of the vaccination, we're discovering that the vaccine is limiting even the spread. So that is a good sign. However, with the caller's question, until everybody that are at risk are protected, then we would still need to practice the safe measures that we know work. So we still have to wear masks. We still have to maintain physical distancing. We still need to practice the common sense of washing hands and not be around people who are vulnerable or at risk or have an immune system that is weak and all that. So this is where that period is still going to happen, and we won't be able to be free around each other until we are all, or at least the majority, are all protected.
Do you worry about what Alan Greenspan once memorably referred to as irrational exuberance setting in when vaccination doses are a little bit more available, that folks might go a little hog wild out there?
Absolutely. That's a risk of the level of comfort that the vaccine, and we are experiencing that, maybe not in a risky behavior as much as people are not being tested as much. We do, as you know, in the county, we have several testing sites, and we have seen a drop in the testing needs. Now, part of it is because people are protected and they're probably not having any symptoms. But also there is that level that, I don't want to get tested because I'm going to get vaccinated. So there is this comfort level that the vaccine is providing, which is justified. But again, we are still not there. So I hate for us to throw caution to the wind and go wild before it is time to justifiably do so.
For sure. A listener named Julie wrote in and asked about the current research on whether or not those who've been vaccinated can still infect other non-vaccinated folks. Kristen, I know you've had an eye on a couple of different research trends. Have you seen anything about this?
Yeah, so research on this question is still ongoing. Both Moderna and Pfizer have acknowledged that it is possible to have a vaccinated person unknowingly carry virus particles and transmit it to others. And so the thing to keep in mind here is that vaccines don't fully protect you against infection, even if they keep you from getting sick. So for that reason, a vaccinated person can unknowingly carry it and spread it. And historically, there have been reports of outbreaks with other diseases traced to vaccinated people. So back in 2009, for example, there was a person who had been vaccinated for mumps but was still carrying the virus and spread it to more than 3,000 people in New York State. And we really just don't know how much transmission can happen from a vaccinated person to an unvaccinated person with this virus. But based on what we know about how other viruses behave and how vaccines work with them, we think it's possible.
A listener named Catherine had a question about her adult son with autism. This is someone for whom a hospital stay would be really very difficult and probably traumatic. And she noted that a lot of the staffers who work with him, a lot of the medical professionals who work with her son and others, are being prioritized for vaccines. But there are some folks in our system, like adults with disabilities, who might still be at risk, even if every medical professional they interact with might be vaccinated. I know that there are terrible needles being threaded right now with situations like this. Mohanad, how do you start to think about questions like that?
It's a very valid question and also a justified concern on behalf of parents and caregivers of people that fit that criteria. Unfortunately, what we stated earlier, with the limited supply, there has to be groups that are at a higher risk that are prioritized versus others. All those that are between the ages of 16 to 64 years of age and have an underlying condition or a disability or a chronic disease are going to be in group 1C, which is a level higher than when we go to the general public. And that is when we expect that more vaccine is going to be available. I think currently, with the current schedule that the state has published, we are looking somewhere in like mid-May for that to happen again, if the promise of more production of the vaccine is going to be available.
Can I just ask maybe both of you this question of when? I've said it before, it's the beginning and the end of almost every story that we seem to do about COVID these days. Do you have any personal strategies for just how you think about this long game that maybe we're, I don't know, a third of the way through right now?
Yeah, I guess. I do believe that we have, in a very short period of time, accomplished a lot, which makes me optimistic in terms of what we can do going down the road. So taking a community or a county like Wayne County, where we have close to 1.2 million, although our most vulnerable, which are the seniors that count close to 200,000, are not done, but 50,000 of the 200,000 have been vaccinated so far. So that is almost a quarter. We have done all the teachers, for example, in Wayne County. That is 20,000 that we were able to do in less than 3 weeks. So there are those bright moments that gives me optimism that we are going to be able to get to the population that we want, and probably sooner, as long as that supply keeps coming.
Kristen Shamus, any advice for the weary as we consider the patient, the considerable patience that everybody kind of has to have right now?
I just keep thinking about the hope that lies ahead. I mean, we already have two safe and effective vaccines that are available to us. No, we don't have enough of it right now to vaccinate everybody, but we're getting there. And then we have other vaccines that are also potentially coming to market. Johnson & Johnson's vaccine, for instance, later this month will undergo federal review and could also be adding to our supply. So we're going to get there. And then it'll be sort of a changing of mindsets and a changing of perspective about how we manage this virus, which will go from a pandemic to endemic in our society. You know, it's going to be around. We can't completely eliminate COVID, you know, completely from the face of the earth. It'll be here, but it'll be much more manageable if we can get everybody vaccinated and if we can get through this really hard time.
We need to take a short break. When we come back, questions about kids and COVID vaccines. Don't go away. This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Today, we're answering some listeners' questions about the COVID-19 vaccinations that are available, albeit in very scant quantities, all throughout Michigan right now. Thanks to everyone who emailed in to stateside@michiganradio.org and who tweeted at us and submitted questions in other ways. My guests today are Wayne County's Chief Health Strategist, Dr. Muhannad Hamami, and Kristen Jordan Shamus, a reporter with the Detroit Free Press. She's been covering the pandemic. There were several listeners who wrote in with questions about the COVID-19 vaccines and kids. First of all, I guess, Muhannad, can you talk a little bit about what you're hearing about when, if ever, we're going to see vaccinations that are approved safe for kids? I mean, is that something that we could think about even by the end of the year?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So we know that the Pfizer is approved for anyone 16 and over. Moderna is 18 and over. But we know that there are at least one study currently happening in children that is testing those vaccines, and it's producing very good results. And as soon as this study is done and some of the preliminary evaluation is submitted, then I do suspect that those two vaccines are going to be approved to be used in children.
Kristen, have you heard anything about the potential concerns for use of COVID vaccinations in kids, or, you know, what researchers might be looking for in terms of their reaction to these drugs? It is a pretty new class of substances.
Sure. So I interviewed Dr. Sean O'Leary, who's the vice chair of the Committee on Infectious Diseases for the American Academy of Pediatrics. I talked to him over the summer, and he was really pushing at that time to move forward with clinical trials among children with these COVID vaccines. Really, really eager to see this happen and get them approved for kids. His point was that he thinks that the bigger risk is not vaccinating children. There is a condition that is extremely rare. It's called multi-system inflammatory syndrome that has been seen in kids who develop COVID. They may not even know they had coronavirus, and then weeks later, after they get the infection, end up hospitalized, and some of them have died. And it's just a whole body inflammatory system that they think is related to coronavirus. And so his point is vaccinating these children would be better than having even a small few of them ending up with this complication of COVID. In addition, he mentioned that we don't know long-term what coronavirus does to people over time. And, you know, if you think about the chicken pox, right, it's a childhood virus that is pretty darned uncomfortable and can be pretty miserable for kids, but decades later can come back as shingles, right? We don't know whether COVID might do something like that to children who then grow up and 50, 60 years later develop a secondary infection like shingles. We don't have any information about COVID-19 that will tell us that right now. And so his point is that vaccinating these kids is far better than not vaccinating them.
Mohanad, I know that you're painfully aware of the questions about kids. There was an absolutely tragic case early on in the pandemic of a 5-year-old girl, Skylar Herbert, in Detroit, who died, I believe, of that exact condition. Am I right?
Right.
Yeah. What are you telling people about the pros and cons of vaccinating kids if we get to that point?
Well, everything starts with a new vaccine. We have currently vaccines that save the lives of children that are part of our daily routine. The minute a mother delivers, then we have a whole regimen of childhood immunization that literally would save her child and make them live safe and prosper. And those at some point started as an experimental vaccine. It went through the whole system of evaluation and all that. They do come with some risk factors. They do come with expected side effects. And we have to treat every vaccine that we are dealing with in the same scope. So as Kristen mentioned, and as the case that you mentioned, although it's very rare, but it's devastating. And if we are able to protect all children, no matter how minute the chance is for some of them to get the full infection or to get the inflammatory state to where it can risk their lives, then absolutely, I am a big advocate for childhood immunizations. And if the COVID vaccines that are currently available are effective in children and are safe to the same degree of safety in adults, then by all means, we should have them as part of the regular immunizations that children should have.
I have a question that is concerned with maybe the business end of the vaccination process. This came from a listener named Roxy who wanted to know about the pharmacy partner program, which is one arm through which vaccinations are being distributed right now. Specifically, she was wondering if the pharmacy partner program would offer vaccines to places like substance abuse treatment facilities. Kristen, have you heard anything about whether, for-profit pharmacies or stores might have a greater role to play in the in institutional distribution?
I am not really fully aware of the reader's exact question. I couldn't really answer that directly, but I do know that pharmacies are beginning to expand vaccine reach and are beginning to open up appointments to people who are within those prioritized groups. So Rite Aid just was added to the pharmacy partnership in the state and has begun offering vaccines along with Meijer Pharmacy. And I believe that other pharmacies are also going to be joining in these vaccination efforts, although I don't know about substance abusers and that sort of thing.
Any news about that from Wayne County?
I don't know if it's specifically the pharmacies. However, I do echo what Christian said in terms of a second phase probably is going to involve more partners in that. We certainly look into these institutions. We look like, for example, we did all the homeless shelters, but staff workers at this point. We are looking into those that work in behavioral health and substance abuse facilities, but only for the staff. I think next phase would be where we are targeting these population, and those would fit into that group 1C of people with more at risk or underlying condition. One thing to specifically maybe address, if I understand the concern of the caller, when we refer to private pharmacies or private healthcare systems, this vaccine is provided free of charge by the federal government. No one is being charged for it, regardless whether they have insurance or not. And therefore, your qualifying to get the vaccine should not be dependent on whether you are a patient of a health system or whether you are a customer of that pharmacy. You should be able to get that as long as you are within that category that is eligible to get that.
I think you're right. I think I misunderstood the gist of the question, but that is an important point. If you're just joining us, we're answering your questions about the COVID-19 vaccines today. My guests are Dr. Muhannad Hamami. He's Wayne County's chief health strategist, and reporter Kristen Jordan Seamus of the Detroit Free Press. One listener wondered if folks living in Michigan without legal status will be able to get the vaccination. I mean, it's one thing to say people without insurance should have access to the vaccine. But do you know if proof of citizenship or some other form of ID is being required at this time?
We, at Wayne County at least, I can say with full confidence, we do not ask for any of that. So we do not ask for a proof of citizenship. We ask for an ID, a state-issued ID or a driver's license to make sure we are checking on the age and the residence and to just get the information. But we do not turn anybody if they are citizens or not. In fact, when we were doing the schools and the school system, we vaccinated a lot of our Canadian educators just because this is where they work. So it is based on where they live.
I can add a little bit to that too, if you don't mind.
Please do.
I spoke to a woman earlier this week who runs a community center in Southwest Detroit, and she told me that they are getting some vaccine doses to immunize undocumented immigrants who don't have ID and can't produce a driver's license. And those are things that are being considered as the state is expanding access to the vaccine. And so that's what some of these federally qualified health centers are also trying to do. Some of these vaccines are being distributed to churches and communities where it can reach out to people who may not be able to get to a place like the TCF Center Garage in Detroit. And may also just feel more comfortable going to their neighborhood church as opposed to some other facility to get a shot.
You know, this really wouldn't be a discussion about COVID if we didn't address some of the rumors flying around. And one listener writes, I've heard rumors of possible vaccination passports allowing those who've been vaccinated fewer restrictions on travel or movement. True or false? Anybody want to field this one?
I can. It's actually a pretty hot topic of conversation right now, especially in Europe. So the New York Times reported that Denmark's government is going to roll out a digital passport that shows your vaccine status. And I was reading that former British Prime Minister Tony Blair told the BBC that these passports are sort of inevitable if we want to get back to safely traveling around the world. And when President Biden took office, one of his executive orders urged government agencies to consider whether it's feasible to create a digital coronavirus vaccine certificate or a document. So while I haven't read anything that suggests that it's definitely going to happen in the United States, it sounds as if we're exploring this possibility.
Muhannad, would you recommend travel for people who have been vaccinated?
Yes, absolutely. Again, using the same precautions of that we keep recommending and we advocate for, but the object of the vaccine and the protection that it is going to provide, and as we are vaccinating more and more people, is to get to some level where we are retaining some of our past ability to travel and to conduct meetings and business and all that. So As Kristen mentioned, we are not yet at the stage where we are doing vaccine passports, but it is something that I know in the past used to be considered. For not too long ago, maybe in the mid-80s, we would request from immigrants that are coming to the United States to do TB tests, to do chest x-rays, just so we can control if they might be. Till now, we inspect them for TB if they're coming and they have TB, they are quarantined. So these are some of the things that we probably have to live with going forward.
One of the things that I think everyone is grateful for at this time is how much healthcare professionals, doctors and nurses, and public health departments have really learned about COVID and the fact that there's a bit more of a knowledge base right now, certainly than we had a year ago at this time. And yet I wonder, are there questions that the both of you still have that are on your mind going into the spring and the summer as more people become vaccinated and maybe we see just more humans out in public again? Dr. Hamami?
Absolutely. I think we are still learning a lot about it. We know more than what we had. We also knew more because although COVID is a new virus, but the family it comes from has been with us for a while now, since the 2000 SARS outbreak, with the MERS, with others. We know enough about that family. COVID caught us off surprise because it was a new member of the family and came with full vengeance, if you want to say so. But between what happened in March till now, we have learned many things that enabled us to manage it better in case of infection. We have a major milestone that we have a vaccine against it. I think now the learning curve is more how the vaccine is reacting and also watching what the virus is doing. You know, the mutations, the variants that now everybody is talking about. These are a natural process of how the virus evolves. And I do suspect that we will still see other members of the corona family and those mutations happening. Whether it would be to the same level or less, it's yet to be answered.
Kristen, what questions are still on your mind in the weeks and months to come?
I would agree with Dr. Hamami about the variants. I think a lot about those and about what they might mean going forward. And I also think a whole lot about how long we get protection from the vaccines. I wonder if we might end up in a situation where, just like we get an annual flu shot, and the flu shots are formulated each year based on the type of virus that's swirling around, whether we might eventually come to a point where when you go to get your flu shot each year, you also get a coronavirus vaccine. And that coronavirus vaccine may be formulated based on the type of variants that are circulating in the community. I don't know if that will happen, but those are some of the questions that I think about and that I wonder about when I look to the future.
It's a great possibility, Kristen. It's a great possibility. This is what we have to do.
Kristen, did I hear that the state is going to be hosting information sessions just to help people stay up to speed on where all this is at?
I saw something last week about the state having information sessions for senior citizens to help them learn how to schedule a coronavirus vaccine and to get an appointment and to learn how to use the online registration systems that a lot of the counties and different places have put up. But what's interesting about that, and that kind of caught me by surprise, is that it's an online virtual education session. And I thought, if these are seniors who, A, don't have access to technology or are already stumbling with technology, they're going to have to register for and get online to learn how to use a website. And that struck me as maybe not being as effective as what we might need to see.
I know that one of the big wins in Detroit and maybe also in Wayne County, Mohamed, is the outreach that's been done offline, catching people on the phone who like we say, just don't have the computer skills for the way most of these appointments are being handled.
Yeah, I think the model in Detroit with their partnership or contracting for a call-in center has streamlined this process tremendously. Unfortunately, we do not have that yet at the county. We've been fortunate so far that we're dealing with focused groups, so we can reach to a fire department and say, send us all your staff, and we don't have to schedule one by one. This is something we're looking into. As we know, we are going to now expand beyond our efforts. We are starting our to support the health systems with the seniors by next week, and we're working with a lot of the senior organizations. We're focusing on seniors that are living in independent living. So we're still looking at a contained population that we can say, you have 20, we'll come and do the 20 instead of scheduling each one of those 20s. But having a real person that answers the phone is absolutely something that seniors are demanding. And it's funny what you mentioned, Kristen, is that they're being educated using the technology that is most challenging for what, how to overcome that challenge.
Exactly.
My guests today have been Kristen Jordan-Shamus, reporter for the Detroit Free Press, and Dr. Mohanad Hamami, who is Wayne County's chief health strategist. I don't know that we could ever really exhaust people's hunger for more information about all this, but thank you both of us so much for being with us for a while to try.
Thank you, April.
Pleasure.
And that's our show for today. Once again, a big thank you to everyone who reached out with questions. If you still have some left, please keep them coming. We'll see if we can find ways to answer them in the weeks to come. I'm April Baer. Thank you so much for listening. See you tomorrow.